and a major redevelopment in that area. And I'm broadly calling that the OMSI plan. I'm not talking specifically about their current property, but the whole region. That includes some pretty substantial transportation investment and infrastructure investment that would imply a very different infrastructure and transportation reality than what exists today. And what I'm trying to determine is to what extent was that on the record, in the record for this particular matter.
I do not believe that those details or transportation improvements related to the OMSI master plan were in the record.
Is that something that PBOT would have reviewed and can speak to, or it
PBOT may,
would
they would
that
have
have been
reviewed their,
considered?
yeah. And the person from PBOT that reviewed this is on the Zoom. Maybe we could ask him if he remembers anything different. I don't believe that was in the record, but maybe Michael would be able to speak to that.
Hi everyone, again, Michael Pena, Transportation PP&D. From my recollection of the TIS, the OMSI, there was information gathered in terms of mode splits that were referenced from the OMSI master plan. I don't believe there was any other information of the logistics and infrastructure investments, both public or private, as far as for this development. But they did reference bicycle trips and those sort of data gathering from OMSI's plan to support this project.
So if I understand that correctly, you're saying that it contemplated a potential different future module split than exists today that is reflective of OMSI's plans? I'm just wondering, trying to level set what you're saying there.
No, I just think they use some of the data points to help support the data collection in terms of gathering an anticipated demand, the mode split travel based on what OMSI's transportation analysis gathered. So in this record for this one, did they never, from my recollection, talked about anything other about OMSI or the future build out or any of that other than just for the data points.
Okay, so then the related question is, can you just give us a highlight, high level, the mitigation plan that was a part of this approval with respect to transportation?
So they are required to do frontage improvements abutting the site. On all three frontages, there's two intersections that will be improved. There will be requirements for ADA accessible ramps, street lighting, street trees, any other sort of kind of infrastructure frontage improvements we do with any other sort of development that triggers the two thresholds that we have. They're not required, I think, as the other person said, to do off-site mitigation. Again, we have that same sort of standard with any sort of development that typically it's tied to the site that they're developing.
Okay, so that's a typical approach that you're looking at what's adjacent and okay. I think I'm good in this area for now.
Great. I have a question, and it's something that was, I think, hotly disputed, and that gets to the question of use versus user. Can somebody give this council guidance on that, the difference between the two and what the standard is?
I can take a stab at it. I think there's not a clear division there in the code. I think city attorney said, you know, we typically look at use and not user, and that's true. That's the how we've typically done land use reviews. Kind of the scale of the building, what kind of operations are going to be in there, rather than the specific business practices of the tenant that aren't related to what's happening inside, directly related to what's happening inside the building. The appellant's attorney said you have discretion to interpret that a different way. I think that's true, but that is how land use reviews have generally been done, is to think about the use as you know, scale, impacts on transportation, impacts on neighbors, direct neighbors, rather than the whole city. And that's consistent with how the hearings officer looked at this one.
All right, let me give you sort of a hypothetical that was running through my mind. as I was listening to testimony. So there were some who testified that we have the discretion, and you suggest we have some degree of discretion. And I can see benefits to government using its discretion. I can also see some significant negatives to government using its discretion. So a couple of hypotheticals. Number one, somebody wants to build a house, and you look at the zoning, you look at the approvals process, you look at whether it is appropriate to use a house, but you like this guy and you don't like that guy. Would anybody suggest we would use our discretion because we don't like a particular person or a particular user of that house? Would that be a justifiable standard for government to uphold? I don't think it would be.
I don't think so either, and that's not how we administer the zoning code.
Okay, and then some people might say, well, that's a spurious example, it's a house. There are corporations that do business in this city, some I like, some I don't like. Some are very good corporate community partners, some are lousy. And I can think of examples in healthcare. I can think of examples in the grocery business. I can think of examples in social media. I can think of examples in modern technology around transportation, where we as a government look at the standards as opposed to the specific operators. And I'm wondering what kind of, when we're talking about, and again, the appeal that was brought to us isn't a broad question, it's narrow. It was brought as a land use challenge. And the question is, did the hearings officer appropriately evaluate these three areas that were identified in a slide? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like they covered their bases. Now, that's not to say there aren't other things that people are suggesting should have been considered that weren't, but I'm struggling to figure out why we would want to give government broad latitude and broad discretion between two different individuals or organizations seeking to do exactly the same thing in the same place.
Yeah, I would say that whether the hearings officer appropriately applied the approval criteria isn't for me to say today, but I will say that his decision was in line with the staff recommendation that we presented to him. So okay, I think there's a
counter argument. I'd love to hear the counter argument as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie Richter, for the record. The reason why we don't treat house approvals differently is because state law has special laws that protect housing. Very, very rigorous special laws that are completely discrete to housing. This is a conditional use permit, and the city has a criterion that requires an evaluation of benefits versus impact. So you all have decided that you're going to take this interpretive odyssey on. And I'm going to tell you why I think that, because I put a lot of thought into this too. What's the difference between a sin business, a business that maybe isn't good for us, a bar, a adult entertainment place, a gun shop? Like, we don't not allow gun shops, right? Or we don't, there are certainly First Amendment rules, but why, what makes this different than a sin business that we wouldn't want? Or some people say Walmarts are bad for economies, or Amazon distribution centers, right? Those aren't active and they're bad for small scale commercial. I'm gonna tell you what I've come up with. There are criminal charges here. There is illegal activity here. That is what makes this different. You wouldn't let, the Exxon Valdez drivers come drive boats up the Willamette because they broke the law. That's what's different in my mind about this. It is up to you to decide, above my pay grade, to decide what's the public benefit. It's you who adopted the standard. It's you who took on that discretion, and it is you who must exercise it. Well, thank you.
I just want to be clear on that last point, though. I mean, is there Are they violating city law, the applicants here, that we are aware of? Have they been tried for something? Have they been prosecuted for something in the state of Oregon or the city of Portland?
So I don't think the answer to that question straight on is no. The applicant is saying there's an economic benefit.
And why that's so important, right? It's one thing when we're talking about someone who has been tried and is found guilty of something. Is entirely different when we're talking about someone who is presumed innocent until prosecuted. And that's both on a national scale and on a local scale. I don't think we can deny land use decisions because someone is being investigated for something. I don't think that can never be a sufficient basis for a whole host of reasons, including their constitutional right to a fair trial and that, you know, and the presumption of innocence. And that's why I'm pausing you there. I'm not saying that is an irrelevant consideration from a public policy perspective, the behaviors of what some people do, but the presumption that there is not a public benefit for their use because someone is alleging they're violating the law, that cannot be the standard.
I appreciate that they have not been found guilty. I appreciate the distinction that you're making there, but the applicant has said that there is an economic benefit to this use. That is, they've done a whole Johnson economic study about it. And what we have challenged is that economic benefit and what that does to the music industry. And you may decide that the public benefit of fixing up the Central East Side outweighs the impact to the music industry. You may decide that, and that is within your discretion to do that. But I would purport to you that economic impact, because the applicant has made it part of this benefits analysis, makes the impact it will have to my clients and all of the music, you know, the musicians that testified today, is just as relevant, because that if you're going to make a decision on economics, that's part of it.
Can I just follow up one point,
if we're going to keep asking questions to the appellant, I'd like an opportunity to respond to those as well.
Sure.
Thank you.
You know, we heard some testimony about the risk of life when we're talking about the railroad crossing. I know this area well. I understand the point. We've had a lot of homicides in that area. And how dark it is, the lack of economic activity, the lack of what we call social effervescence in that area. Is that, from your vantage point, a relevant thing for us to consider when we're talking about public benefit? What exists there today in that, both on that property, adjacent property, the immediate vicinity, which does include a lot of crime, which does include a lot of really sad behaviors. Is that relevant from your vantage point when we talk about public benefit?
I think it absolutely is relevant, but I think you have to ask yourself if the infrastructure is there to have this flourish. You can't set a use like this in an industrial zone where the infrastructure isn't there to support it. And I would also suggest that the Central East Side needs a win, but this is not it. The reason why it sat vacant for a long time might be because the city hasn't made the investment in the infrastructure so that the economic industry can flourish. The sidewalks aren't there. The transit isn't there. So you can't, we can't, you know, so yes, I think that absolutely the answer to questions is it should be considered, it can be considered.
Mr. Mayor.
I go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to just point out a couple things, add a little bit of facts to the dialogue. You know, we're talking about the infrastructure for the site. We're talking about sidewalks. We're here presenting and proposing a substantial private and privately funded investment in the infrastructure. Yes, these are vacant lots. The sidewalks are not to city standards. But after if we're fortunate enough to get this venue approved and to build it, they will be built to city standards. The pedestrian corridors will be expanded. You know, I believe that appellant's case is that those improvements should somehow be required throughout the district on the back of this one development. I think we know why that's not practical. I think we know why that's not constitutional. The discussion about why are there no requirements for improvements to train crossings, that's a jurisdictional one, but it's not in the city's jurisdiction. If you wanted to today to tell us to go improve a train crossing, we couldn't do it. Okay, so those are those train crossings, and there's a safety analysis demonstrating what the build out impact would be to train crossing safety. That's in the record. And it is well within acceptable limits. You know, I believe the way to describe that is the same, the build and no build scenarios with the project happening or not. The way that the engineers articulated it is the margin of error where you start needing to look at what are improvements and getting into discussions with train railroad operators and under the engineering manuals that control these things, it's 0.5. We're at 0.0002. So we are having a conversation that's not focused on the facts and the record. We have, before we came here on appeal, created a very thorough record. The other side has not responded to those with facts. The other side has responded to those with arguments. The hearings officer noted as much. They noted that we had expert evidence in the record and that the transportation related arguments presented by project opponents were largely based on inference and argument. I'd also like to just clarify one other thing.
Sure, go ahead.
A couple of presenters have leaned really hard into the criminality argument. There are no criminal charges, it's civil. And, you know, I think to Commissioner Gonzalez's point, right, like we have federal courts for a reason. Those charges are being vigorously denied and defended by Live Nation. However that plays out over however much time, the venue will still operate consistent with federal law, and whatever any federal judge says is what Live Nation should do. And, you know, however that goes, we don't actually know, nor do we think that your land use code is requiring you to kind of handicap that or figure it out or make your decision based on the existence of that proceeding.
Commissioner Mapps.
I'll pause right now.
Question. So related to the conversation you just mentioned, it matters who the applicant is here from your perspective. The applicant is Colas and Beam, is that correct?
Correct, that is the applicant.
Okay, and so this question is about the applicant,
okay,
from your perspective, not the user, is that correct?
The application of the, what we're calling the benefit standard, that weighing the benefit.
It's a land use question, and the hearings officer approval of this application from the applicant.
Yeah.
The applicant is Beam and Colas, correct?
Applicant or Beam and Colas, from my perspective, that is important because that's who my clients are, not Live Nation. I think to put a finer point on, I think, the distinction and where I'd draw the line, and going back again to what is the actual language of the code, it asks you whether or not public benefit outweighs any impacts that are not mitigated. The hearings officer found that there are no impacts that are not mitigated. What we're really talking about is impacts, not a broad concept of what is public benefit or not, not whether or not Prosper Portland commissioned an economic study about whether or not this venue is, because Johnson economic study that we're talking about was commissioned by Prosper Portland. It's a good study, but it doesn't open the door to all manner of forward-looking arguments about impacts that have nothing to do with the venue. What I would point you to is the purpose language that talks about impacts to the local area, impacts to the transportation system, And I would say that's what we're dealing with. Another very bright line, I think one that rises to constitutional level, is are these impacts flowing from the development that is proposed here today? There's a whole lot of arguments about future business practices and what will live in contracts for musical tours that don't exist yet. I don't know how that can be brought to bear and have a nexus to what we're actually doing here today with proposing this venue.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Perhaps did you have some?
Yeah, let me, since we got both of you up here. Ms. Richter, I think one of the things I've heard you say today is that this is just the wrong project in the wrong place. There's just no way to throw up an auditorium for 3,000 people and have it work in the neighborhood because of the train issues and the public transportation issues and the ADA issues. That's basically correct.
And the three intersections that are at high crash ratings and that the applicant's only mitigating for one.
Okay. Do you have a response to that?
Absolutely. My response is the standards. The standards are the what is to be supposed to be analyzed in the transportation impact study. That's the level of service in a currently and in a build scenario. We've looked at that for each of the intersections. The standard is whether the intersections are failing. The standard of high crash is something from the Vision Zero analysis. And a high crash is a threshold that is not actually applicable in the code. It sounds intense when you say high crash. However, what we're talking about are fender benders and people not stopping fully at stop signs and having situations like that. I don't want to cite the numbers offhand, but we can get you those numbers. And it is not a lot of crashes that over years that get you into that scenario. So we're talking about, handful of crashes over a handful of years type situation versus, a threshold where if there were only three as opposed to five, we wouldn't be high crash. That, all that said, the standard is what is the level of service at these intersections? Are they failing? They absolutely are not. And that's why the transportation system has the capacity to support the proposed use.
The factors that the commission is supposed to consider or council is supposed to consider include safety, street capacity, level of service, which what he's talking about, connectivity, transit availability, availability of pedestrian and bicycle networks, access restrictions, neighborhood impacts, impacts on pedestrian, bicycle, and transit circulation. So it is not those things. And
Ms. Richter, just to confirm, you're in 215A3A?
Yes.
Okay, just want to make sure I can trust.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. And table four is the summary of collisions that study intersections, and the total collisions is 66 over a 5-year period. Most of those collisions involved pedestrians. So it's not nothing.
I appreciate. Thank you for that clarification. Also, you're a former Peabody guy, so I kind of know these numbers, or I have a sense of what's happening in this space. I'm just trying to make sure that I'm clear on the precise arguments that are before us, and maybe I'll ask one more. Ms. Richter, one of the things that you've expressed concerns about is the specific operator, Live Nation, operating this. Would things be different if a different company was running this venue? Same 3,000 seat theater, but you have a different company without the baggage that is associated with Live Nation.
Yes, but it wouldn't change that this is the wrong place. It wouldn't change that they haven't studied any of the sidewalks beyond their own frontage, and they're not intending to improve them in any way.
Okay, thank you. Do you have a response to that at all? And I don't know if you would.
I think we've heard what the thrust of the arguments here today are and what's brought people out. It's opposition to Live Nation. Ms. Richter is doing her job and trying to tie that to the code. However, all of these issues that we're talking about weighing different factors, what we're talking about is weighing evidence. And it's the evidence in the record. We have a transportation impact study. We have an amendment to that as negotiated with PBOT. We have follow-up memoranda regarding any number of these issues. That is the lion's share of the evidence, and is over, and it has not been rebutted in a meaningful way on any kind of point-by-point issue or with actual evidence to the other side. Clearly, opposition has said, you know, they don't agree with that, more should happen, that type of thing. However, they've not actually gone and done the analysis, provided impacts. Note that every conversation talks about like what our traffic impact study says, and our traffic impact has been reviewed by PBOT and scoped with PBOT, and you know, that's how we, through those numbers, we got to the recommendation of approval.
Thank you very, very much. Commissioner Gonzalez?
I think this is helpful. I had one other question on the scope of public benefit, but I don't...
Sure, let me just put a pin on it. Everyone's tired. And, you know, I think there's one question. Can we stand up a 3,000-seat theater in this neighborhood and make it work? There'll be trade-offs here, but maybe we can mitigate some things. And maybe we can't. And that's one of the questions before us. And then there is, I think, a slightly different question is, if we stood up the same theater, but we have a different owner here, what are we mitigating? And I think in a land use space, at least my understanding, and my staff is going to have a heart attack, and but I think in a land use situation, in an appeal like this, one of the things we're trying to do is, are we mitigating for the physical world that we're building? That's at least my current understanding of it. And as your kind of infrastructure guy, this is a space I've revisited before, and we've revisited before. And typically in spaces like this, we're trying to manage traffic and stormwater and sewer and all that, all these sorts of things. I have heard some, you know, I see the headlines, I've heard the testimony. They're very concerning questions about how Live Nation operates as a business. I'm not sure if this is the place to address that. You know, one of the frustrating things here is I don't exactly know where the forum for addressing, you know, Portlanders' skepticisms about Live Nation's business practices are. It feels like there should be a place for that. I kind of feel like it might have been Prosper's board, but I'm not quite sure.
Can I respond to that last question?
Sure.
I think that's an appropriate question for a future city council. I think that's an appropriate question for the state legislature. If there's behaviors that we believe are predatory by a major operator inside the state, that is 100% the proper domain of the legislative branch of a future city of Portland and state legislature. That is, if the DOJ process doesn't satisfy the concerns of citizens in our community. I'm not sure it's a land use consideration.
Yeah, so I'll take a stab at this. And first of all, I'm impressed with legal teams here, and I mean that quite sincerely. And this has been a very good conversation. I think people have raised valid concerns about Live Nation in particular. And as Commissioner Gonzalez has pointed out, they're being adjudicated right now. But I have not heard what I think are sufficient reasons to overturn the hearings officer's determination. I haven't heard that. As I said right off the bat, our scope here is narrow. And so personally, I'm ready for a motion to deny the appeal, but if my colleagues have more questions, let's hear them.
So moved.
Well,
okay. So there is formal language I would like to put forth. I would move that the council tentatively deny the appeal, uphold the decision of the hearings officer, and ask applicant and or staff to return with revised findings.
Second.
I have a second from Commissioner Ryan. Any further discussion?
Can I clarify? So we're voting on your motion. We're not voting on.
This is a tentative vote on my motion.
Yeah.
And the motion would be to deny the appeal.
And just to ground all of us, especially those still watching at home or in the crowds, what would happen after this motion?
So we take a vote unless people want to further discuss it or if people have more questions. I can stick around all night, but frankly, I've heard enough and I'm ready to make a decision. And then we would vote and then we would have to come back on a date certain, which Rebecca would identify for us for a final vote.
Okay, thank you.
And just to state the, it might be obvious to everyone, but the record is closed for public participation. There'll be no additional testimony. Council will make a tentative vote and then we'll come back for a final vote, but there will be no more opportunities to testify.
That is correct. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Gonzalez.
This property is zoned IG1. Major event entertainment is a conditional use permitted in the zone. 33815215 sets forth the standard the standards to consider here. I simply do not see failure to comply with those requirements at this juncture, especially when taking into account the mitigation plans articulated. What I do see is local business owners with skin in the game bringing capital to the city, a project to the city that will bring joy, connection, family wage jobs, and economic stimulus to the property, to the neighborhood, and by extension to the city. I see two folks abiding by the rules to do so. I recognize the concerns of the local music industry. I would recommend that you monitor the DOJ process, and if it does not satisfy your concerns, lobby a future city council and state legislature for appropriate protections. Beyond seeking protections, I would encourage you to engage with local and state government on how to continue to build and foster the local and independent music ecosystem. I just do not see this as a zero-sum game with respect to public benefits. I vote aye on the motion.
Maps.
I appreciate everyone who testified today. We had two great legal counsel in the room. I am of the view that the hearings officer got this correct. And for those listening at home, because I'm sure this will be the subject of chatter for the next several days, you know, I think the question before us was, does the building proposal in front of us comply with land use law? I believe it does. Today, I also heard some important and compelling testimony about the business practices of Live Nation. The folks bringing this project forward have raised assurances that they have a path forward where Live Nation can be in Portland and do business in Portland in a way which is consistent with our values. Time will tell in terms of whether or not that works out. I do, however, think it's really important for someone who sits in these chairs as a member of council to fundamentally obey the law. And I think we've heard some arguments here today that have urged us to ignore the law, and I understand why. That's not a good practice. I think it leads to a slippery slope that will not serve us well in the long run as a nation and as a city, which is why I vote aye.
Rubio.
I hear and appreciate what I've heard about the fear of losing that special independence in our music ecosystem. And artists and venues and enthusiasts are a critical part of the city's identity and our fabric. And clearly there are a lot of concerns on the operation side. And again, that isn't related specifically to our decision today. And I'm not deeply familiar with all the aspects of the proposed tenant, like many of the testifiers have noted, and have a lot of depth of, study. But clearly their practices are under scrutiny right now elsewhere. I also understand that as of this morning, all related parties in the project put some of their concessions in as commitments in the purchase and sale agreement. Which was positive news. My hope is that it will provide the accountability needed to follow through and make sure those happen. What I am more familiar with is how I've seen the applicants Beam and Colas open operate locally, and also Cargo, Bunk, Wamsi, and others who actually are located and operate in that area. The jobs they all bring to working families, and their legacy of building opportunities for working people. So I trust how they all know how to do business in our city and what they believe is good for their neighborhood. I also see this project as an upside in our city in terms of local opportunities for investment, including how it contributes to other catalytic development, like the OBSI district that we talked about, and also the overall benefit to Portland's east side. And as one of the testifiers stated, we as a city, we need to provide a consistent standard of evaluation for everyone. And in this case, I believe our hearings officer did that. Several testifiers also mentioned that the current state of the neighborhood was not safe, and particularly at night when they're alone. And the reality is that one of the biggest contributors to safety is the presence of having other people around. So from that perspective, I'm really hopeful that the activity generated would make the area look and feel much safer than it is today. And I believe that is a big public benefit. So in regard to the narrow decision criteria for this land use action, I haven't seen or heard anything in the record that suggests to me that the hearings officer erred in the decision. So my vote is aye.
Ryan.
The matter before us is a land use question. This is not a referendum on business practices. Convening as a land use body, we only examine the evidence in the record and whether to uphold or deny the hearing officer's decision. Based on the presentation today and the evidence in the record, I vote to uphold the hearing officer's decision to approve the land use permit. As such, I oppose the appeal. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The motion to deny the appeal passes 5-0 unanimously. The appeal is tentatively denied. Council clerk and city attorney, do we have a time and date certain for this to come back for a final vote and adoption of findings?
So I believe we have October 2nd, because we are operating under the 120-day clock. Is that enough time for the prevailing party's attorney to prepare findings and return them to staff and myself by, we have to file it with council, so like mid next week, the 25th?
Yes.
You can do that. Okay. Yeah. Is that enough time, Andy, for us to then turn it around? Okay, so the October 2nd, is that not what we have? Well, I think the second at 9:45, we'll only have, the mayor can't participate, I think, then, but
I cannot participate.
The final vote.
That is correct.
But I will be 5-0. Out of town
visiting our sister city.
Yeah.
However, if I can participate by phone, I will attempt to do so.
Okay.
But I think you know where my sentiment lies.
Yeah, I think that we will be okay, even if there's three or four members, given the tentative vote.
If not, the team knows how to reach me, where I'll be.
Okay, so October 3rd at...
October 2nd at 9:45 a.m.
At 9:45 a.m., time certain for a final vote. And the prevailing party's attorney will prepare updated findings and get them to staff and myself by September 25th.
Okay, so to clarify, this matter returns to council on October 2nd at 9:45 a.m. for adoption of the findings and the final vote. Thank you, everybody. We are adjourned.
Thank you.